It's a Grody day.
It's Grody time, yeah!
More Mark Grody.
Mark Grody. Mark Grody.
Ah, Grody.
We'll go next to Mark Grody.
Are you from the score?
We've gone delirious. Mark Grody is here. It is Grody time. Mark Grote, whichever you want to call it. It's more than a Bears hit, though. Can we just say that?
I can't leave.
You can't turn on your microphone either. Is it on?
The mic is not working. How about that?
The mic isn't working.
I've been told to slide over.
This is going great.
Unbelievable.
We broadcast live from the Scores Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. This is Rahimi and Harris. I'm still going to call it the midday show a lot because that's what it is. It's in the middle of the day. That's what they call this day part. This is the score, and Mark Grody is actually part of the rollout.
We're going to need that mic to work before 1 o'clock.
We have two mics down now.
Mark turns on one of the mics. It doesn't work. Mark, therefore, goes to the next mic, and points it up at him, and it just
it went lame.
Greg, get an engineer. You know, at 1 o'clock, we're running the four-man, you know, four corners offense. So, yeah, it's, somebody's got to deal with the mic on the end because Anthony Heron's joining us in studio at 1 o'clock.
That's right.
What is happening?
Like, I don't know what happened.
If I had to say, like, if I had to describe my life in a nutshell, your microphone situation was pretty much it. Mark's going to join us at least a couple days a week, and we are happy about that because we like having a lot of people and score personalities on the show. So first and foremost, thank you.
You're welcome. First and foremost, too, congratulations to you, Layla Rahimi. Congratulations to you, Marshall Harris. Congratulations to the Rahimi and Harris show. I can't wait to work with you guys 2 days a week because I have had a blast working with both of you two individually and as a threesome in the past. Our relationship has gotten complicated now.
Is it threesome or thruple? What are we? Do we decide what we're going with?
Well,
here?
Thruple is the less dirty word, I suppose.
All of them are bad. Yeah, I'm just going to throw that out there.
I've never heard of thruple. Tell me more about this thruple situation.
So we're a couple, and then we bring you in, and now we're a thruple.
Okay.
Oh, no.
We're to complicate the situation.
Dump them.
Yeah, this is already pleasantly unstable.
Shout out to those two guys as well.
I'm also laughing because, like, some, you know, posts are coming in, whatever, and people always use this time to, like, just complain about the score too. That's always what this is. But I'm laughing because people are like, congratulations on returning to middays. And I'm like, I've been here at least 2 days a week, roughly on average, for the last 5 years. Like, it's just a matter
but
of
how. But it's different now. Now you depend on this place for your benefits. It's different.
That's right.
It's another level. I still have benefits through July from my previous. Like,
I just
laugh because I'm like, this really didn't change much for me.
Well,
I also laugh at all the people who are like, oh, this is going to be terrible. You can't have somebody. We had a full-time show where I was the
right.
host.
You have proven yourself in a full-time hosting chair already.
That's always why I laugh at these days, because it's not that different for the ones who are here all the time.
I think it's a day to be celebrated, and also you're saying congratulations to you. Congratulations to us.
Yes.
Because you are a part of this team.
Yes, well, thank you, and that's the way it's going to be. And I wanted to say shout-out to Ray Diaz and Robbie the Tree Triano. I got to sit back there with – I don't think in my entire score existence that I have ever spent an entire like hour in a producer studio while a show was going on, because I would think that they would probably not want me in there, and I could understand that. But since I'm part of this show, I was hanging out with those two guys, and I realized what a hard-ass job that those guys have. I'm like, oh my God, these are all the things you guys do. And I learned some stuff from Robbie Ray, as I like to call those guys.
Robbie Ray. Yeah. Cy Young winner right there.
Yeah, Robbie Ray, who's still playing baseball these days, I believe.
Is he really?
Yeah, I think so. I think Robbie Ray.
I'm still mad the Sox didn't sign him when he was a free agent.
I'm still mad about that.
Hey, everybody can't be Gage Taylor Workman.
How about Colin Ray? Colin Ray, Cubs,
yes.
Been pretty good. Pretty good, Colin Ray.
Robbie Ray pitches for the Giants.
Look at that.
That's after I go to bed. Also, he's 3-0 with a 3.73 ERA.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting how that worked out for him?
Yeah.
You know what else I learned?
What'd you learn?
Spot Buster. You guys ever heard of Spotbuster?
Yeah, we know what a Spotbuster is.
Okay, I know what a Spotbuster was.
More on whatever show this is in 60 seconds on the score. So yeah, we're happy you're here a couple days a week.
I'm thrilled
to
be here.
And it's perfect on the day after, well, 2 days after the NFL draft. The Monday, the football Monday, if you will.
Oh, yeah.
We're all Monday morning quarterbacking, and I want to know what you, as a guy who didn't wait till the fifth round to be drafted as a quarterback, what you think about what we witnessed for the Bears over the weekend.
Yeah, well, I'll say this. It was wholly unpredictable, as in maybe positionally there were some spots where you got it right or maybe, but like I guess I'll start with Luther Burden III getting taken in the second round. That was a surprise. I don't know anybody who wasn't surprised that they went wide receiver in that spot. But as I thought about it, and I never thought it was a bad idea, as I thought about it, one of the most ridiculous things that a Bears fan, a Bears observer, a Bears reporter, a Bears analyst, a Bears play-by-play guy can say about the Chicago Bears franchise is, you're good at wide receiver. You got enough. You got enough guys catching the football. That is a preposterous thing to consider when we consider what this organization has been since its inception. Great. There was a great nugget that the common era of the draft started in 1967, as they called the common draft era. This is the first time since then that the Chicago Bears have taken two pass catchers with their first two picks in the draft. That says everything. That if that's not a microcosm of the Chicago Bears organization, then I don't know what is. So while maybe that's not that big of a deal, it is symbolic of everything. It's symbolic of the past and is symbolic of exactly what is going on right now with the Chicago Bears.
This hour is brought to you by almostfreeteeth.com. Save on dental implants today. I also want to point this out, though, is weren't we all sitting here last year when the Bears drafted Rome Odunze and we had that sad but fun moment where poor Rome had to learn about the Bears franchise receiving record? And then he goes, for the year? And we're like, no. And then he's like, wait, for the career?
Right.
And that became, it wasn't a bar, as we know. That wasn't where the bar was set. But it was an indication of just what you're talking about. And so we still try to figure this out another year later.
Well, another fact is about Rome Odunze. I think that Rome Odunze had a decent year for a rookie. You got to put it on the relative rookie scale. If he's any other wide receiver, it was a mediocre year. It was very up and down for him. So Rome Odunze has to take that next jump. And I'm not saying that they drafted Luther Burden in any way, shape, or form for Rome Odunze protection, but it's not like he's a finished product yet. It's not like that's a done deal in terms of chemistry between Caleb Williams and Rome Odunze. As a matter of fact, you know, maybe the best chemistry that he had last year, Caleb, was with a receiver that is no longer on the Chicago Bears, and Keenan Allen. I mean, he said as much, that Keenan Allen is the guy that he has been most comfortable with in his entire career, albeit it's been a short career so far, but he did say that. So believe it or not, although some of this feels, I'll steal a Anthony Heron word, some of it feels gluttonous in terms of the pass catchers, I still think you need every single one of those guys, and it's up to the coaching staff to sort this out.
No, I would agree with that, and that's what we're trying to figure out. I mean, it's a great thing to say, is there enough ball? You know, that's a great thing to say. But at the end of the day, Ryan Pohl is one of the biggest criticisms we've had of how he's built the team. Built the actual team was that it wasn't starting on the lines like the Detroit Lions, for example. And it wasn't even acknowledging the run game after that when they had their next first round draft capital. So it's great you got the Lions coach. This is different. So how are you going to put this together in a way that mirrors the success of what we have seen on other teams in the league?
Well, I mean, I guess then you have to look at what they did in the second round with Ozzie Trapillo, the offensive tackle. I mean, that is a highly drafted player. He seems to be more comfortable at right tackle. So they did address that. And we can get more into the depth chart and how that might go down as well. But one thing I'll say, too, about getting the ball to people, Layla, because that's something that we were talking about before the show. I think that, hey, man, let's find out how badly these guys want to win. You know what I mean? Like when we hear it from these players. DJ Moore, do you need the ball or do you want to win? Roma Dunze, do you need the ball or do you want to win? Cole Kmet, do you need the ball or do you want to win? Luther Burden, Luther Bears, do you want the ball or do you want to win? Because I get it. Like, there's going to be a lot of guys who are going to be saying, I didn't get the ball this week, or where's mine? Let's see if they're all about what they say, and that's about winning, because that's the first thing they say. If we start to hear some dissension in that regard, then shame on the players.
Well, the reason I give it pause is because I think there is enough ball to go around if it's a Ben Johnson functioning offense based on what we've seen the last three seasons. Here's why. Your offense will be on the field a lot more. You'll have many more drives. There will be many more points scored. That's more touchdowns for everyone involved. And so while you may not have, see, 4 1,000-yard receivers, you're going to have guys getting big catches for first downs, big catches for touchdowns, and playmakers. What I'll say about the first two picks is these guys look like explosive playmakers in the mold of a Ben Johnson on any given play can take it to the house. Can't say the same thing about the running back that was drafted, because last time I checked, his 40 time was not good, and he can be caught from behind.
Manon guy.
Yes. But so I understand the question is definitely one that needs to be asked. Is there enough ball? And my answer to that is, if Ben Johnson is who you say he is, yeah, there's enough ball. It's on Ben Johnson. And if it's not on Ben Johnson, you know who it is on? The quarterback. Caleb Williams, do your job, make accurate throws, be on time, and you will stay on the field. If you don't do those things, guess what? Third downs turn into fourth downs and you punt. By the way, they drafted a punter pretty high too. Last year.
Yeah, they've drafted two
so
of them.
So last
actually.
Year,
they drafted
man.
Two in 3 years. But that's kind of my point here is this may be who you think is your best available. And Ryan Poles talked about staying disciplined to the board. But is your board good enough?
I mean, that's a fair question. I mean, we've seen lots of misses for sure in the Ryan Poles era. But if this is the way they went about it and this is different, a departure from what they have done in the past, if they really were looking past like legitimate need, then it's probably good that they philosophically did things different this year. Sometimes you have to do things differently to get better.
I go back to the same concern I have, though, is we said all this last year.
Yeah.
We mm-hmm. talked about giving Caleb Williams all these weapons last year. They doubled down when they decided to pick a receiver at 9th overall, given who was on the board and available at the time. You know, given the fact that they did pass over some I think, at least considered stable cornerstones of offensive lines elsewhere in the league. You know, maybe not they're not a generational type, but at the same time, they're players that teams try to build around, like Olu Fashanu is the best example. They did that. They told you exactly what they wanted to do. Build around Caleb Williams, give him as many weapons as possible. We saw a rookie quarterback not fully utilize those, largely in part because we were concerned about the line. So you tell me which should come first in that equation.
I think part of this is they did. Let's not look past the fact that they brought in Drew Dahlman and Joe Tooney and Jonah Jackson. That's huge. That's huge because, as one of the Bears coaches said, I don't remember which coach it was. I'd like to give proper credit, but it was such a good line. It was something to the effect of, this will allow Caleb Williams to step forward in the pocket as opposed to stepping back in the pocket. So you have those three guys who I'm pretty sure are good. You then brought in Ozzie Trapillo, the offensive tackle, who might be a starter, and at worst, he's probably a pretty good backup. And then you also did, I get it, sixth-round pick. They bring in Luke Newman out of Michigan State as well. So there is more there, way more there than there was last year. And part of the problem last year was, you're right, we all thought that they had the right people around Caleb Williams, that you set Caleb up in maybe the best predicament a quarterback was in last year, at least on paper. Guess what? It wasn't. It wasn't there. Some of that is a product of Caleb Williams being a rookie, and you have to allow some of that. And some bad moments, for sure, for Caleb Williams. But there was very little chemistry with him and Cole Kmet on the field. The chemistry took a while to develop with DJ Moore, and hopefully we see the next level of that. Keenan Allen is gone, so it had you had to bring in some different guys because last year was just a little bit too shaky in terms of the overall chemistry.
I look at it like this with Caleb Williams specifically. He was a rookie. Let's start with that. And sometimes expectations, even though you are the number one overall pick, can be too high, especially based on what ended up being the cluster that he was on. When you look at the coaching staff and the offensive coordinator situation and the offensive line, that's a lot of factors not working with Caleb Williams in a rookie season, despite him being the number one overall pick. And it's hard not to do a direct comparison to the guy who was drafted immediately after him and seeing how much better of a position he was put in based on the offensive coordinator and everything else that lined up for the Washington Commanders, who apparently are moving back to Washington, D.C. I don't know if you guys saw that news.
Mm. But no more Andover, Maryland for them?
No more Maryland. We're going to get it back to the district, if you will. But bottom line is this. Caleb Williams has to do whatever it is that Ben Johnson needs him to do to be on time with this offense. And I agree with you, Layla. I think it should start with the offensive line. You can say you have an embarrassment of riches at all these skill positions, but if you can't properly get them into the hands of the skill position players, who cares? And so the line is the first thing that needs to be fortified.
It's pretty solid right now.
No, isn't it the offensive line? Who's starting at left tackle?
That's it.
Well, we're still trying to figure that out. Well, we could talk about the possibilities there. Obviously, it could be Braxton Jones. We heard Ryan Pohl say out loud that Darnell Wright, it's possible that he moves to left tackle, and then Ozzie Trapillo, who is a natural right tackle or has played a lot more right tackle than left tackle in his career, could get a crack at the right tackle spot.
Isn't that the same thing we said about Darnell Wright, though?
But they said they wanted competition at these positions. And perhaps that is what we are seeing. That instead of it purely being you drafted the best players available, it's that there is the inference that Ben Johnson says these are my best players available. You know, this is how I can coach and scheme these individuals. And is there a referendum at tight end to a certain extent, knowing what we've just seen? Because a big part of Jaden Daniels' success was who? Zach Ertz. That was a big part of it, especially over the middle of the field, as we saw. He had a very nice performance against the Bears, for example. That was one of those key pieces to his success.
Here's what happens now. Now Ryan Poles has done his job, and obviously he'll be in the rooms for everything that goes on with his team. But he'll now pass this on to his coaches. Here you go. Here's the players. Here's why I brought in Dennis Allen. Here's why Dan Roschar is here, the new offensive line coach. Obviously Ben Johnson, but it's going to get down to them now. They have been handed down to him. Let's see what they can do. And there will be scenarios where you're going to see all sorts of different things between those two tackle spots.
Right, but I also think that Ryan Pohl still very much has faith in his guys. His Braxton Jones, Karan Amagaji, et cetera. Well, look at that line and tell me, especially when it comes to left tackle, if that wasn't reaffirmed.
Does he have faith or does he have hope? Does he have hope that his picks pan out? Because there's nothing that I'm seeing that says you should definitely have faith in those picks that you made because you've got this strong track record of your picks, especially down a few rounds, working out.
Well, and Braxton Jones was a fifth-round pick. Karan Amagaji was a third-round pick. Mm-hmm. So what we know how you feel about your first-rounder, Darnell Wright. That makes it make sense. But what's your level then of trust when it comes to anointing with a second-round pick when you value an alignment?
Yeah, well, look, Ryan Poles finally said it to us again, to the masses. He said that there will be competition at left tackle. So he is talking. So he is not as steadfastly holding on to him at Braxton Jones at the left tackle spot. I mean, it's pretty obvious that he's finally come around. It's sort of like the Bulls that finally, maybe it took Arturs Karnišovas a little bit of time to realize he had to break up DeMar DeRozan and Zach LaVine and Caruso and all those guys. It's the same thing here with Ryan Poles. He's realized it. Now, if it comes down to it, and the best person to play left tackle is still Braxton Jones because you don't feel like it's going to be a good move to have Darnell Wright on that side, then they'll stick with it. And let's be honest here. Like, Braxton Jones has not been a disaster at left tackle. He's been okay. It's an upgradable position, though.
This segment was brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today. Mark Grody, Marshall Harris, Layla Rahimi, and you on the Score. More Bears Draft Talk is next.
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, Rahimi and Harris. Middays 10 a.m. to 2 on 670 The Score.
With the 56th pick in the 2025 NFL Draft, the greatest franchise in the NFL, the Chicago Bears, select Ozzie Trapillo, tackle from Boston College.
Where were you when Clay Matthews opened the draft, Seth Rollins? I think he even brought the belt.
He did have the belt.
Yeah, that was a nice touch when Seth Rollins brought the belt.
That's clearly who you wanted to come out at that moment at the beginning of the draft and just take him down several pegs.
If we're doing this true WWE style, Seth Rollins should have come out wearing the belt as soon as Clay Matthews said that. Out
of some, you
shut up!
And then you hear his music, and then he comes out of some mythical tunnel because the event was outside, where he just runs full sprint, and then somebody gets their knees taken out.
Wow, knees.
I said WWE style.
That sounds violent, though.
Well, there's no top rope to jump from, so you have to improvise here. And then somebody gets a folding chair. These are the rules. I don't make the rules. Grody's just sitting here
Seth Rollins
looking
needed
at me terrified.
He needed to go off on Clay Matthews. I'm just thinking about Clay Matthews right now. That's why I'm sitting here. Like, it's a trigger for me.
Your reaction was hilarious. Yeah. You were not pleased. You were not standing for it at all.
You leaned into the... I definitely think you leaned into the whole... this will not stand.
No. And I did not know that was coming. We were still trying to figure out exactly who it was. And then I was, oh, yeah, that's definitely Clay Matthews. Here comes the... And then he did that and just...
Here's a pro tip. Don't say I'm going to go off script here. That gives people too much lead time. You just got to do it if you're that guy. Right?
That's fair. I'm with you on that because let me tell you something. When he came up, I was like, oh, and then he mentioned the president. I was like, oh. And I was like, what's he about to...
Where is this going?
It was a supreme troll job. I'll give credit where credit is due. It was a supreme troll job.
Yeah.
I'm going to go off script here real quick, Roger, but I just got off the phone with the president, Donald Trump. He asked me to pass a message along to all 32 NFL franchises. So let me tell you what it reads here, all right?
Mistake two.
Who's that talking?
Perhaps
it says,
Penny.
My fellow Americans, the Bears still suck!
Oh, wait a minute! No! Oh, no, you didn't!
Let's go!
Double.
The pack!
No! Dave, you can't let this happen. For God's sake,
sorry,
you coach the Bears.
I'm sorry.
For God's sake, you coach the Bears. You went very WWE. You went very Jim Ross right there.
Yeah, it was super Jim
All
Ross.
All I needed was he's got a family.
I didn't know what to do. Like, I needed help. I was like, somebody do something
this
in this
will
studio.
Not
Clay
stand.
Matthews just made my list.
That man has a family.
I was like, am I the only one seeing this, Dave? And Dave was just, who is that?
Is who is that? He was like... Could you not see the physical draft?
Oh, we could see it, but I mean, that's a weird angle over there. I think at the time we just had that television on, so it was a little bit, definitely couldn't see the name under it from our seats.
Got it.
So it was just sort of trying to figure out who it was facially, and we got there, but
by the time you got there,
it was already too late. A fair fight would have been Seth Rollins
at
the time.
No doubt.
And you know what? I have a feeling that if we asked him, he would probably have been game for it.
Seth Rollins, I just want you to know you're on my good list. I got the bad list, and I got a good list.
He just made the list.
He just made the good list.
Can I get on the good list?
You guys are already on the good list, right, but
cool.
don't do anything to get on my bad list. Just don't do it, or I'll come after you.
I want to ask about a different list.
Hmm? Oh.
The running backs list at the draft.
Ooh.
You know, especially all the people who went before the Bears had pick number 39. Do we have a feeling that the Bears wanted to draft one of those upper tier running backs who wasn't named Ashton Dente and then went with Bird instead because he was available?
Yeah, I mean, I think they were interested in Dente. I think that they probably were interested. I mean, think about it. They started coming off the board fast and furiously. At least some of the, you know, top get Quinshon Judkins goes number 36 overall. Then you had Travion Henderson going to the Patriots at 6 in the second round. And then right after that, the Bears take Luther Burden. So I have to feel like that they probably were interested in one of those guys, but they were not interested enough, obviously, to trade up to get one of those guys. So they are in a very interesting predicament here. You know, it feels like with Kyle Manungai, the running back out of Rutgers, I mean, that feels like another Roschon Johnson, to be honest with you, in terms of the style.
That's how I feel about this. Is we know that Manungai's 40 speed is probably what had him. You know, like the Beast, for example, had him 20th ranked in the running back class. And I know that there was some really positive press surrounding him as far as when he was picked. Again, I reiterate, it's not these athletes' fault where they were drafted where they were. However, when you consider the Bears' needs and what they wanted and how we're talking about him in the same vein that we talked about Roschon Johnson, who unfortunately neither one, Roschon Johnson at the time, and I think Khalil Herbert would be the other one. You know, they trade him to the Bengals, which is a separate conversation in my mind, but similar. You're still looking for your downhill runner there. Well, you know, you're still talking with a lot of hope surrounding what you don't exactly know you have yet on your team.
I know it was a deep running back class, but was it so deep that you could say, hey, we took the 21st running back selected and we feel good about it?
Wasn't that deep. No, it was not that deep.
I was like, I thought it was like 12 deep. And then when they get late, I'm like, why are we still looking for a running back?
And this also goes with like the miscalculation of DeAndre Swift by a lot of us. Because I think I remember sitting there in training camp and watching DeAndre Swift and watching like the short, quick passes to Swift out of the backfield. And none of it, except for some moments, DeAndre Swift had some nice moments. It never worked out the way it was supposed to work out with DeAndre Swift.
That's it. And we've got two more years of that discussion. He signed a 3-year contract. The next running back taken in the second round of the draft was RJ Harvey out of UCF to the Denver Broncos at 60. So that's what happens after Travion Henderson was off the board. And I'm very curious, did the Bears have a plan B that just perhaps didn't work out?
Probably. I think that that's very plausible. Yeah. I mean, I think they knew going into this draft that the running back room is a tenuous situation. At, you know, like it's not a lost cause with DeAndre Swift, and who knows what it looks like once this coaching staff gets their hands on him. And Ben Johnson has worked with him. He also left on Ben Johnson's watch. I can't believe that this is going to be the depth chart, though, necessarily. I'm not sure where it's coming from at this moment, or if that is just going to have to be one of those positions where you can't have excellence at every spot. Like, they start with this, and then they add on as time goes.
Well, on its face, it's not a premium position, right? It's
That's
running
correct.
Back.
That's
so
correct.
So it kind of makes sense, except for the fact that we're talking about Ben Johnson and his predilection as far as the running game goes and how important that is. Can he just scheme up holes which running backs can run through and it doesn't matter? Is this a Kyle Shanahan-style plug-and-play situation? I'm trying to understand, based on the fact that there is no Sonic and there is no Knuckles in Chicago, who's going to be Super Mario? Or is this going to be Mario?
Is it going to be on the
Frogger? Or is it just regular Mario?
I think
Frogger
gets splattered. A major concern of mine is, it's kind of like the baseball adage, you know, if in order to walk more, you have to swing the bat more. Like, that's kind of the dichotomy. If you really want a team to commit to your run game, you have to have weapons who are good enough for the team to devote resources to on the defensive side of the ball. Like, part of the reason you're able to open up pass by showing run is when they actually respect the run. So in order to get the defense to respect your run game, who are you showing up with to begin with here?
Well, why don't we go back to the new interior of this offensive line? That should be a big factor. And like, if they can't get DeAndre Swift going now, then they know it's that's a real problem. Because you can't just look, we can't talk about how average to below average the Bears' offensive line was last year and then not say that DeAndre Swift wasn't hurt by that as well.
That's
so
it.
So
yeah,
that's something we got to keep in mind.
If it all starts at the line and the entire discussion we have centers around that, why did they decide to give up that draft pick? Why did they decide to trade back after 39?
I think at which point? You're talking about the 3 second rounders?
About the 40, pick number 41.
41.
Why did they trade pick 41?
Oh, well, they wanted to multiply. They ended up getting 3 second rounders out of it. I think it was just quantity in that spot. Like 3 second rounders, in theory, you're getting three starters, right? We all know it doesn't always work out that way. But if drafting in the second round, you are expected to get impact players. So I think it's as simple as way better to have 3 second rounders than anything in the third, fourth, fifth, sixth, or seventh round.
Based on what you just said, Ozzie Trapello should start.
I mean, he might.
Okay.
Yeah,
it's not out of the question.
See, that's where this comes into play.
Well, that's the thing with Shamar Turner. At least you can be like, okay, he's part of a rotation.
Exactly.
That makes sense.
Right.
Because it's defensive line.
Gotten a lot of texts here, which I appreciate. I appreciate everybody chiming in. And 847 at the top says, every show is treating running back like a premium position. The O-line makes the run game. Worry about the line and edge rusher. Who cares about running back? I think the issue is we had every indication to think the Bears treated running back like it was a position that was a focus for them. You know, the Bears, they were complicit in the Ashton Gentry discussion. And I don't think it was a smokescreen for Colston Loveland necessarily.
I'll say this. As far as the running back, as we just said, it's not a premium position. I'm okay with that. It's just, if you have a draft class this deep of running backs, why would you not get one of those that fall into the this being such a deep running class? And I agree with the texter because I'm way more concerned about edge than I am about running back. I just am.
See, and Groats, I think that they told you who they wanted their edges to be when they paid Dio Odengbo that money.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that because, I mean, I guess at this point, you got to think about it that way. But again, Dio Dangbo, he's the best he's done is 8 sacks in a season.
A lot of pressures, though.
I get it. I'm not saying this is like a worthless player by any means.
8 sacks would have far and away led the Bears last year.
Right. Yeah. And if they could use him all over the line, this reminds me a little bit of when they brought in DeMarcus Walker. Because DeMarcus Walker, when he came in, he was just coming off of like a pretty good season in Tennessee where I think he got up to, you know, his career high in sacks, 6 or 7. So they thought maybe this is an ascending player, but it was also similar. It was all, this guy does all sorts of different stuff. You could put him in different places. That's what they plan to do with Dio Dangbo. This is a better athlete than DeMarcus Walker was when he was with the Chicago Bears, but there are some similarities. And let's not forget, Dennis Allen, like most guys who run the 4-3 defense, they love that pressure on the interior. He has said that out loud. Like, you get that pressure, that's the way the 4-3 works. But I agree with you. I'm a little bit nervous about those that sack the quarterbacks for the Bears.
And let it be known, like, 4-3 is my happy place. Like, that's a much more common concept. But, you know, the joker position or whatever you want to call that, you know, your rover, that's where I think, you know, the details come into play here is trying to figure out your personnel. We have a lot more to come. The Midday Show on the Score is now called Raheemy and Harris. Hi, I've been hosting with you since 2020. But, you know, that's a thing today. I appreciate you guys hanging. Mark Grody, Marshall Harris, Layla Raheemy, and you. Next on the Score is Halftime. And we didn't mean to examine somebody's relationship. But when the facts come to you, you have to take a minute. That's next on the Score.
Raheemy and Harris, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on 670 The Score.
What time is it?
It's halftime.
It's halftime of the show. We want to call it halftime. Raheemy and Harris and Mark Grody, you. We appreciate you all. If you need to stand up, do what you need. The subject for halftime today is as follows.
Uh-oh.
What on earth was that viral video originated by CBS Sunday Morning involving Bill Belichick in a distressed hoodie shirt?
That's on brand, though, right?
Should he? On national television with his girlfriend sitting in the background? Okay, before we give it all away, just listen to this for yourself.
The other change for Belichick is 24-year-old Jordan Hudson, his creative muse, as he writes in his book.
Make sure that that's the...
Jordan was a constant presence during our interview.
You have Jordan right over there. Everybody in the world seems to be following this relationship. They've got an opinion about your private life. It's got nothing to do with them, but they're invested in it. How do you deal with that?
Never been too worried about what everybody else thinks. Just try to do what I feel like is best for me and what's right.
How did you guys meet?
Not talking about this.
No?
No.
It's a topic neither one of them is comfortable commenting on.
Okay. I feel like this is too happy to talk about the music. Maybe we should just fade it out and get to the real stuff.
Oh, wow.
Here.
I was about to lay some stuff on us. I want your professional opinion on
this. I'm
going
to stand up and just walk around here, I think. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, you can stand up and get crunk.
Yeah, a little stretch.
Here,
yeah.
The thing that makes this so confusing is not even that Bill Belichick has a girlfriend whose perhaps authoritative sense or questioning shutdown matches his energy. It's that he's deferring to her. Like, Bill Belichick spent how much of his career not deferring to anyone, anything, forces of nature, whatever it may be. And yet in all of this, he's giving this woman part of his driver's seat in a way we don't comprehend. Like, this is Bill Belichick 5.0, and I'm still on Bill Belichick, like, 2. You know what I'm saying? That's the part of this that I think... has so much disconnect for all of us. So she's shutting stuff down. Bill Belichick, who normally gives like one word surly answers to everybody, is suddenly being deferred to by his significant other. That's what makes this so surprising. I say that regardless of who it is, that's the style that we are not familiar with. And that's what makes this so confounding.
When there's that big of an age difference, there has to be certain concessions that are made from both sides. And one of the concessions being made by Jordan Hudson, it would sound like, is you need to listen to me at times. And I need to be a part of this. And I'm sure that Bill, to get what he wants to get out of the relationship, has decided that he will listen to her in these certain scenarios until he doesn't.
Did you see it as a deferral, though? Did you guys see that as a straight up deferral? Like, he asked the question and Bill looked like he was gonna say something
when you,
and she interjected quickly.
When you picture authoritative coaches in the NFL, whose face is it?
Yeah, but it's Bill.
If it's not his, whose is it?
That's a good question.
Who birthed a generation of coaches who all want to be like that? You all bow down to Jordan Hudson now.
Not you all about it. Okay, so the age difference.
Amazing.
In case people don't know, here's what happened. Tony DeCoppo, he interviewed Bill Belichick ahead of his new book. The book is something about all about winning, or The Art of Winning, Lessons from a Life in Football. Now, Bill Belichick is 73 years old. Jordan Hudson is 24 years old.
44.
You're doing the math? Is that what's going on?
40 years? 50 years.
You don't need McGrath to do that math. It's 49 years of age difference. Or no, yeah, 49 years.
Yeah,
I think about it.
I like
does
to round.
Does that pass the half your age plus 7 rule?
It does not. I'm going to go ahead and tell you it does not. It doesn't. You know what? It doesn't even pass the half your age minus 7 rule, which isn't even a thing.
But still, that illustrates what we're dealing with here.
So it's a 49-year age difference. Now, I didn't really care, but when she answered the question the way she did, now I'm like, well, how did they meet?
Well,
right?
Okay, so the Ringer actually points this out. The Ringer had an article in March, Nora Princiati, and it says that they met on a beach in Jupiter, Florida.
She targeted him.
If that is truly the case, why was this such a point of issue
right.
with CBS News, who made news talking about its journalistic integrity over the weekend?
I can't imagine Bill in Jupiter, Florida at a beach approaching her. I think it was the... I am guessing here.
Shoot or shoot. And if Bill Belichick can't, who can?
I don't know that...
Respect to the coach.
based on the interview that you just heard and the one that I watched yesterday, I'm going to guess that she approached him. She knew who he was. She targeted him.
My, how the tables have turned.
Or the turns have tabled. Yeah, how the turns have tabled.
What is this paper company you speak of?
Look, I'm not going to sit here and infantilize Jordan Hudson. Do what you want. You're both adults.
That's it.
But you're dating someone who is famous, like famously famous. So this comes with the territory, especially when you agree to do the interview to promote the book. They seemed annoyed by the line of questioning. I'm sorry, by they, I mean she, but they had some Borg-like activity in the way that they were giving eye contact to each other. You saw the interview. And so I don't understand how they didn't see this coming is my question. Or I guess
I think they saw it coming, but they were ready to be defensive about it, especially she was ready to. I actually think this probably could turn out to be a great relationship between the two because they're both clearly, they're both getting a lot out of this, right? She's apparently getting a lot out of this, and Lord knows he's getting a lot out of this. So good for them.
It seems like a perfect relationship, honestly. Kinda.
What's interesting is they're just now really public, too. There's a lot of reports saying that they've been together for at least 2 years.
So she was 22? Is that what you're saying?
So I'm still referring to the article I mentioned from The Ringer.
Okay, when was that article?
And she says, the author says, Belichick and Hudson have been together for at least the last 2 years, at least. We can deduce this because in late summer of 2023, he was seen in New Orleans with a young brunette who looks like she could be Hudson. This was just before People broke the news via an exclusive tip that Belichick and his longtime girlfriend, Linda Holiday, who he had been with since 2007, had split after the relationship had, quote, run its course, end quote. In March 2024, Belichick was spotted out to dinner in Boston with somebody Page Six described as a, quote, mystery brunette, end quote. Still, the burgeoning relationship was under the radar until last May when Rob Gronkowski, of course Gronk, made this joke during the Tom Brady roast.
Listen,
now we're getting to the detail here. Perhaps the reason they don't want to talk about when she met was because of when they met.
That's fair. It's a bit odd. That's a large gap.
On February 11th, Hudson posted on Instagram about their 4-year meetiversary. 4 years. It's as long as I've been hosting at the score. Not really longer for me. So then that would mean.
Do you think maybe 20? Robert Kraft introduced them? I mean, I could see why she wouldn't want that out there.
Okay. All right. I got
There's
you.
There's a pun to be made there. Yeah, I'm staying away from it.
I'm staying away from it.
See, I just had the line. You guys get to fill in the
blanks. I'm not.
I'll just say this. The other drama.
Oh, no, there's no other.
The other drama with this book, this Bill Belichick book, is that he doesn't mention Robert Kraft at all.
That was also
so they got a little
the
beef there.
Or maybe there's some sort of plausible deniability.
No, he was talking about the art of winning. You don't mention the guy who put you in position to do all the winning.
Well, when he was asked about it, he was like, it was a mutual. He said
separation.
It was,
he's like,
he didn't even say separation. He just said it was mutual.
Steam room.
Yeah, it was bad. The interview was controversial.
No, it was hilarious. It wasn't controversial. The interview was hilarious.
I just want to know what North Carolina recruits think. That's my other thing. We have more coming up with Raheemi and Harris, Mark Grody, and you on the score. We need to listen to what Ben Johnson and Ryan Poles had to say about their draft. That is coming up next as we check out the tape.